So picture this. The temperature suddenly drops. You realize winter is finally here, and you go digging into the very back of your closet for that one heavy coat you haven't worn in ages.
Oh, yeah, the one that always has that faint, dusty smell from being packed away in the dark.
Exactly, that exact smell. So you pull it out, you put it on, and naturally you shove your hands deep into the pockets to warm them up. But instead of just, lint, your fingers brush against a crumpled piece of paper.
Probably an old gum wrapper or something.
Right, or you pull it out, and it's this faded receipt from a tiny coffee shop. And you look at the date printed in that classic pixelated cash register font, and you realize it's from exactly 10 years ago.
Wow, a full decade.
Yeah. Now, technically speaking, that is literal garbage. I mean, it is a piece of trash with faded ink that should have been thrown into a recycling bin 10 years ago. But standing there in your hallway, holding it, you don't see trash, do you?
Not at all, because, well, in that fraction of a second, the receipt completely stops being a transactional object. It bypasses logic and becomes a time capsule. I mean, it acts as a sudden, visceral anchor to who you were a decade ago.
It really does. It's wild how that works.
Yeah, it brings back the exact person you were sitting across from, the specific anxieties you were carrying that day, which probably seem totally irrelevant now.
Oh, absolutely.
And just the general texture of what your life felt like at that exact moment. You aren't remembering the coffee, you're experiencing a sensory playback of your past self.
That magic trick, where a literal piece of garbage suddenly holds the weight of your entire existence, is the core focus of the deep dive we are jumping into today.
And it is such a fascinating topic.
It really is. We are looking at an incredible art catalog called Trastio, Pintura Artistica,
Yeah.
by the author Jero Duque. Specifically, we're focusing on pages 371 through 373 of Chapter 7, which is beautifully titled Mementos y Oficios, or Moments and Trades. Duque is exploring the underlying logic of how art takes our everyday, seemingly disposable routines and transforms them into something extraordinary. And the mission today is to uncover that logic, because once you grasp how this works, it is going to completely change the way you view your own daily grind.
I mean, to even begin unlocking Gook's logic, we have to look closely at his choice of the word trastio.
Okay, let's unpack this. What does that mean in this context?
Well, if you want to understand anything about this text, you have to understand the conceptual weight he places on that term. In a literal sense, throughout much of Latin America, a trastio is a move, like moving house.
Which usually brings to mind cardboard boxes, renting a truck, the physical exhaustion of moving a couch down three flights of stairs,
Exactly.
and just that highly specific, chaotic feeling of being in transition between two places. Your entire life is temporarily reduced to taped-up squares.
But Duke isn't talking about real estate here. He takes that physical chaos of a residential move and elevates it into a metaphor for the transit of human existence.
Oh, wow. So life itself is the move.
Right. The core premise is that human life isn't constructed out of those massive framed milestones that society tells you to celebrate.
You mean like weddings or graduations?
Exactly. I mean, you have what, maybe a handful of those in a lifetime? The vast, overwhelming majority of your time on Earth is actually woven together from what he calls silent trades, oficios, silenciosos.
Dylan Trays, I like that.
Yeah, these are the daily chores, the repetitive labors, the minor gestures that you barely notice, but they are actually doing the heavy lifting of sustaining your life.
It's the invisible thread holding the entire fabric together, even though we only ever point at the big, colorful knots.
That's a great way to put it.
And Duke doesn't just, leave you to ponder this as some abstract philosophy. He immediately grounds this concept of the human trastio with incredibly specific, concrete visual examples of human effort interacting with the physical world.
He really anchors the philosophy in sweat, dirt, and labor. He wants to document dedication.
Right.
He wants to show you how your physical reality shapes your identity day in and day out.
But I'm looking at the curation of these visual examples, and honestly, I'm struggling to see the thread here.
How so?
Well, he highlights a painting by Daniel Esteban Duque that depicts falconry. We are talking about the ancient, almost medieval discipline of training birds of prey.
Right.
It is an art form rooted in total control, fierce discipline, and a deep historic bond between a human and a wild animal. But then, literally on the same page, the text pivots to firefighters battling the 2021 and 2022 wildfires in Southern California.
Which represents the absolute peak of modern uncontrollable chaos.
Exactly. You have men and women in high-tech fireproof suits putting their physical bodies on the line against a 20-meter wall of flame to save communities from total incineration.
It's intense.
And then if that wasn't enough of a leap, it jumps again to a painting of a solitary fisherman standing completely alone on a pier, also in Southern California.
I can see why that feels disjointed.
Yeah, it feels like someone just threw darts at a board of random hobbies and natural disasters. Mm. You have a medieval falconer next to a high-tech firefighter next to a guy quietly fishing. What am I missing here?
Well, it seems disconnected if you only look at the surface details, like the era or the technology. No. But Duke is distilling human labor down to its absolute essence.
Okay.
When you look at the falconer, the ash-covered firefighter, and the patient fisherman, you are looking at humanity in the exact same fundamental state.
Which is?
Measuring its fragile strength against the primordial forces of nature.
Wait, really? So taming a falcon, it's not actually about the bird itself?
Not at its core. By training this creature, the human is essentially trying to negotiate a truce with the sky. It's about interacting with the element of air.
Oh, wow.
Precisely. It's the traestio, the transit of human existence, desperately trying to find balance with a physical world that is vastly more powerful than we are. Think about the mechanics of the elements involved here.
Okay. Air, fire, water.
Right. The air is an untamable infinite space. The falconer is attempting to communicate with a wild creature that belongs to that boundless sky. It's a labor of establishing a pact with the untamable.
And so the fisherman is submitting to the ocean? I mean, he can't force the water to give him a fish?
Exactly. He has no control.
He can't control the tides or the lunar cycles or the weather patterns. His silent trade is pure physical patience. He's anchoring himself to reality by accepting his total lack of control over the water.
And then you have the firefighters, who are throwing their physical will against nature in its most voracious, destructive state, which is fire.
That makes so much sense now.
Yeah. In all three of these scenarios, Duke is illustrating that the physical effort, the sweat, the risk, the sheer exertion of will is what proves we exist. It anchors you to the world.
Right.
It shows you why these are called silent trades. A fisherman on a pier looks completely silent, totally still from the outside, but internally, neurologically, he is engaged in a massive vital struggle with the environment.
Okay, so we have these epic existential battles with the elements of wild nature. But, I mean, let's be real, most of us aren't out there fighting wildfires or taming birds of prey.
No, definitely not.
We are just commuting. We are walking on pavement. But Duke brings that into the fold too, doesn't he? Because the catalog shifts from the vastness of the ocean and the sky right into the dense modern city.
It does. It moves from the wilderness to the claustrophobia of urban life. He brings in street photography, again highlighting the work of Daniel Esteban Duque, capturing fleeting, ephemeral fragments of the metropolis.
Right. The text describes photographs of a pedestrian just crossing a gray avenue, or sun rays briefly filtering through a canyon of skyscrapers.
Very everyday moments.
Yeah, or the specific slumped posture of someone waiting for a bus in the pouring rain. And here's where it gets really interesting to me. Visually, a guy waiting for a bus totally lacks the heroic life-or-death weight of fighting a wildfire.
Completely different vibe.
Right. But it makes me think about whenever you sit on a bench in a crowded public plaza, you sit there, you watch hundreds of people walk by, and you realize that every single one of them is starring in their own internal mental movie.
Oh, for sure.
One person is agonizing over a medical diagnosis. Another is vibrating with excitement because they just fell in love. Another is just stressed about what to make for dinner. But to you, sitting on the bench, they are just extras walking through the background of your life.
We are all completely blind to the massive collective choreography happening around us.
Exactly.
That is a brilliant way to conceptualize what Duke is pointing out here. The city itself is functioning as a primordial force. But instead of being made of fire or water, it is made of millions of colliding human wills, moving at a speed that the human brain isn't naturally evolved to process all at once.
It's just too much data.
Right. So the text suggests that street photography acts as a necessary intervention. It allows you to hit pause on a reality that is moving too fast for the naked eye to truly digest.
It freezes the choreography so you can finally see the individual dancers.
Yes. It captures an interaction, a momentary glance on the subway, the specific geometry of how the light hits a wet sidewalk, the exact tension in the shoulders of the person waiting for that bus. And it lasts for a millisecond.
Just a flash.
In real life, that moment leaves absolutely zero physical trace. It vanishes into total oblivion. By capturing it, the art provides a sensitive register of the urban experience.
It essentially proves that a completely random Tuesday afternoon have profound objective beauty. It gives dignity to the anonymous.
Well said.
But, you know, even commuting, even existing in a crowded public plaza is still a public performance. You're still out in the world being perceived by others.
Sure.
So what happens when you strip away the public gaze entirely and look at the labor that happens behind closed doors? Because the catalog goes there next. It funnels down from the macro wilderness to the collective society, straight into the living room.
It dives into the microscopic, deeply private level of the home and the family.
And the list of specific moments the text highlights here feels, honestly, deeply personal. It lists a photograph marking 26 years since migrating to a new country.
Right.
It mentions a plastic drone toy, which Duke specifically describes as premonitory. It brings up a regional cultural festival in Valle del Cauca, Colombia, called Sevilla en Bandola.
Such a vibrant event.
Yeah. And then it just lists these purely effective images, like Daniel and Aaliyah at a waterfall and a couple of snapshots of a dog named Marley.
Marley the dog.
Right. And looking at this list, I gotta say, these sound exactly like the camera roll on my smartphone right now, or your phone. Why does a random snapshot of a dog named Marley or a cheap plastic living room toy belong in a serious art catalog right next to majestic falcons and blazing infernos?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that contrast is actually the entire point.
Okay, how so?
Duke answers it by telling us that these are not just snapshots, they are generational testimonies. Let's look at the photograph of the 26-year migration anniversary.
Yeah, let's unpack that one.
On the surface, to a stranger, it's just a standard family photo in a living room. But as a piece of documentary art, it is a profound record of uprooting.
Oh, see.
It captures the resilience, the silent suffering, and the sheer willpower required to build a new identity from scratch in a foreign place over nearly three decades. That is the trastio, the transit of life in its most literal and emotional form.
Okay, I can see the invisible baggage of a 26-year move. That makes sense.
Well,
but what about the plastic drone? I mean, you take a picture of a toy on the carpet.
Mm-hmm.
Duke calls it premonitory, which implies it's predicting something.
Well, think about the timeline. 15 or so years ago, a plastic drone was a quirky niche toy buzzing around a suburban living room.
Yeah, take a picture of it because it's a novelty, right? Funny little gadget scaring the cat.
Exactly. But today, drone technology completely defines global supply chains, international logistics, and modern warfare. When you look at that old, seemingly trivial photo now, you aren't just looking at a toy. You are looking at the exact moment the future sneaked into the domestic space, disguised as a child's plaything.
That is wild.
It bridges the gap between the analog past of the family home and our current hyper-technological geopolitical reality.
That is fascinating. It's like having a picture of a baby T-Rex in your house before you knew what it was going to grow up into.
Perfect analogy.
The context completely changes the object. And I imagine that same logic of context applies to the cultural festival, the Sevilla in Bandola.
It does, absolutely.
For those who might not know, a bandola is a traditional string instrument. And a festival like that isn't just a polite concert. It is the loud, vibrant, musical heartbeat of the Valle del Cauca region in Colombia. Its community, its rhythm, its identity.
Exactly. And at the time the photo was taken, it was probably just an amazing, loud weekend listening to music. But in the context of migration and displacement, remembering the 26-year anniversary we just talked about, that photo of the festival becomes a critical anchor.
I mean, hold on.
Yes. It becomes a documented mechanism of survival. It's a record of a family actively doing the labor of keeping their regional roots alive, despite being physically displaced from their home.
Which finally brings us back to the dog named Marley. How does a dog photo become profound? Because, as the text reveals, there is a specific mechanism that transforms the mundane into the profound.
Yes, there is.
The plastic drone, the festival, the dog, they don't instantly become art the second the shutter clicks.
Mm-hmm.
Something has to happen to them first.
And that mechanism is time. Time acts as the ultimate necessary filter. The author posits a 10-year rule.
Oh, 10-year rule.
Yeah. When seemingly trivial, domestic events are viewed with a decade or more of distance. They undergo a chemical transformation in your mind. They age like wine. The triviality, the boredom of the day, the stress of whatever else was happening, it all burns away. And what is left reveals itself as an essential, load-bearing piece of your life's narrative.
It's because memory isn't a perfect tape recorder, is it? We tend to think our brains file everything away equally. But Duke paints memory as a highly capricious strainer.
A capricious strainer. I love that phrase.
Right. You might completely forget the exact date of your college graduation, or what the keynote speaker even said, even though that was a major, expensive, framed milestone. But you will perfectly, vividly remember the golden hour light hitting your kitchen table on a random Sunday, or the exact rhythmic sound of your dog Marley wagging his tail against the floorboards.
Because the brain drops data it doesn't need. The graduation was performative. It was an expected societal script.
Right, you're just going through the motions.
But the light on the table or the dog's tail, those were unscripted moments where your emotional experience was pure and unmediated.
So what does this all mean for us? How does Duke define what art is actually doing to these moments? What are the mechanics of this transformation?
Well, Duke concludes by breaking down the function of art into three distinct mechanical actions when dealing with these everyday moments. First is preservation.
Preservation, okay.
Art acts as a hard drive. Because of neurological efficiency, your memory will eventually drop the raw data. So art steps in to capture the light, the geometry of the faces, the crumpled receipts, before that capricious strainer of memory can let them slip down the drain.
It stops the bleed of information. And the second function.
Second is contemplation. Art provides a mirror that forces us to stop and actually look.
Because we're usually just rushing past it all.
Exactly. When you are rushing through your morning, you don't contemplate your coffee cup. By framing it, art halts your momentum and demands that you observe the texture of your own existence.
And third.
Third, which is the most critical step,
yeah,
is re-signification.
Re-signification, basically the editing process.
Exactly. Years later, art looks at the messy, chaotic, completely unorganized footage of your life and begins to assign it narrative meaning.
Wow.
It's the mechanism that connects the plastic toy on the rug to global technological shifts, the weekend festival to ancestral survival, and the walk with the dog to pure, uncomplicated love. The temporal distance allows your brain to construct meaning from the chaos.
It's like looking at a pointless painting. You know, when your nose is right up against the canvas, when you're in the thick of washing the dishes or paying the bills or sitting in traffic, all you see are random disconnected dots of paint.
It just looks like a mess.
Yeah, it looks like a mess. But the 10-year rule, that distance, forces you to take 10 steps back. And suddenly you see that those random dots were actually painting a masterpiece of your life. It proves that your trastio, your transit through this world, actually meant something.
And internalizing this framework completely alters how you perceive your own mornings, because it is incredibly easy to wake up, make the coffee, sit in gridlock traffic, and feel a profound sense of emptiness.
You end up treating your daily life like it's just a frustrating loading screen you have to sit through before the real game finally starts. You think, you know, once I get the promotion, once I take the vacation, then my life is happening.
It's an exhausting way to live, constantly devaluing your own daily labor because it isn't cinematic or dramatic.
Right.
But Duke's catalog invites you to completely dismantle that mindset. It invites you to see those moments not as a draining, endless loading screen, but as the actual game. They are the rough drafts of your generational history.
That is so powerful.
The greatness of a human life isn't usually found in one heroic, adrenaline-fueled battle with a wildfire. It is found in the tenacious, quiet accumulation of thousands upon thousands of ordinary moments. Your silent trades are what build the architecture of your existence.
But you know, this reliance on time brings up a really provocative thought to end on today. The whole magic of this resignification relies on friction. It relies on distance.
What do you mean by friction?
Well, it requires a crumpled physical receipt to accidentally survive in a coat pocket, or a printed photo to sit forgotten in a drawer for a decade, waiting for time to naturally distill its emotional weight. It requires you to forget so that you can rediscover.
Oh, I see. The 10-year rule demands a temporal gap.
Right. But think about how we handle memory right now. We don't wait 10 years anymore, and we definitely don't allow ourselves to forget.
That's true.
We document every single coffee cup, every single time we walk the dog, every single sunset digitally. And we don't have to wait to rediscover it in a dusty closet, because our phones and algorithms instantly serve us our heavily curated memories of the day, complete with prepackaged emotional background music.
Yeah, they just pop up on your screen.
Right. So if the true magic of these silent trades relies on the slow, capricious strainer of human memory and the friction of time, what happens when we remove the friction? By letting machines instantly curate and serve our past back to us on a silver platter, are we short-circuiting our own brain's ability to find profound beauty in the mundane?
That is a fascinating question.
Are we robbing our ordinary moments of the chance to naturally age into something extraordinary?
It's the ultimate modern tension. We have traded the space required for natural meaning making in exchange for total immediate preservation.
It's definitely something to chew on while you are scrolling through your camera roll today. So the next time you find a faded, crumpled piece of trash in the pocket of an old winter coat, don't just toss it in the bin.
Definitely not.
Take a second. Hold it. And remember that you are holding a tiny piece of the invisible thread that stitched your life together. Enjoy the rest of your entirely ordinary and beautiful Tuesday afternoon.